Welcome to Harmony Primitive Baptist Church. This is Elder Neil Phelan Jr. preaching from regular Sunday morning services.
Appreciate the good song service and Brother Dan's comments and the prayer we heard this morning. I hope you'll continue to pray for us as we stand before you this morning. We've been going through the Old Testament, and we've recently gone through the life of Solomon, and we've seen the end of Solomon and some of the things that happened to him, which were not good. But this morning I want to look at something that he wrote, which is the book of Ecclesiastes. So he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, he wrote the Song of Solomon, he wrote most of the book of Proverbs. So I think it's important for us to not only look at his life, but to see the things that God inspired him to write for our learning. And it is good to have our visitors with us today. Good to see people coming back to God's house after everything that's been going on. It's been kind of depressing seeing, you know, the vacant seats, but it's good to see people coming back, and I'm glad you're here today. So the Ecclesiastes is found over there right at the end of the book of Proverbs, and the word Ecclesiastes means the preacher. And so here he is going to be preaching in something that he has written, and it's believed that he wrote this book in the latter part of his life. As we looked at his life last Sunday, we learned that Solomon started off a very good person, if you can say that. He was very pious. He wanted to please the Lord in everything that he did. They constructed the temple. He dedicated the temple. He prayed at the dedication service. He did many wonderful things. You come to this place, though, one of the next chapters, it says, "But Solomon loved many strange women." And we learn that those women that he loved or lusted after were from other nations. They worshipped other gods. And they drew his heart away from the one true and living God as he began to bow down to these other places and did some horrible things in his worship service. And so this book is believed to be written by him at the latter part of his life when he becomes very depressed and sorrowful, and life has become something that he actually detests every day of his life. I want to give you a couple of overviews of this book as we go into it, and we're not going to go over the whole book, obviously, this morning, and I'm not going to spend any other Sundays going over it either, because we would be in this book for months. But I want to give you enough this morning that if you want to read the book of Ecclesiastes, that you'll have enough knowledge that you can go through it and read it and gain the more from it. But when we're going through this book and we're studying it, this book is really Solomon's experiment of life with a conclusion. And I'm going to give this conclusion to you that he found out this ain't it. If you might don't mind me using that language, because he found out that our happiness is not down here. It's in another place. He tries his best with all of his wisdom and knowledge that God had given him to find this perfect happiness, this utopia down here. And we're going to see him do this today in this letter. But he finds himself unhappy, perplexed, and discontent in all of his studies, because he was a guy that thought with all the wisdom that God had given him and all the resources that he had at his disposal, gold and silver. Last Sunday we read that silver was nothing in his kingdom. And every meal he had was out of a gold bowl. I mean, he was so wealthy. And he bought everything that he laid his eyes on. And any woman he saw, he had her. So it teaches us that happiness cannot be found in these things. And so Solomon spends his life studying people, their consequences to their life, their behavior, looking at them and seeing what happens to them. And he's trying to figure this, he's trying to become this person that knows exactly how life is going to happen. Now, sometimes you and I can do that. You know, when you're young, you've got dreams, you've got ambitions, you're thinking, you know, I'm going to get to this place in my life. I'm going to figure this thing out. And I'm going to get to this place where I've got no problems, no troubles, no cares, and I'm going to have this perfect life. I've never met anybody that has a perfect life. Almost everybody that I've ever met has got a problem of some kind. And if they didn't cause it themselves, somebody else caused it. And if somebody else didn't cause it, Satan caused it. I mean, it ain't down here. We're going to learn in this book. So Solomon's become the psychiatrist with psychological problems at the end of his life. The know-it-all who knows not himself, really, and he's confused. And he's afraid of death, as we're going to see in this letter as well. So I've got a couple of quotes that I got from some of my resources that I want to give you about this book as well. Now, I gave you what I thought about it, and basically it agrees with these other writers. One of them said, one of the common statements of the purpose of the book is that it sets before us the search for the summum bonum, the highest good. And of course, we find out he didn't find it. And the conclusion is that it cannot be found down here under the sun, which is used many times. The book is a show of the world and its fleeting vanities, and of the life of its dwellers, which is even a vapor that appeareth for a little while and then vanishes away. And so that's what Solomon is seeing in life. It's only 12 chapters, by the way, and it reads like a depressed person who hates his life now and the later part of his life. And it basically is a good thought about those who spend their life without God, trying to find their perfect happiness in worldly things, in vanity fair. So let's read a little bit in chapter 1, and we're going to get into some of the basic themes of this. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Well, who wrote the book? Solomon. I read in one commentary, says it's questionable whether Solomon wrote this book. I'm thinking it just told you who wrote the book. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun ariseth, then the sun goeth down and hasteneth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Into the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath already been of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king in Jerusalem, in Israel, in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning the things that are done under the sun. This sore travail has God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I'm going to stop right there in reading, and we're going to look at some common expressions that he uses over and over, and then we're going to look at some themes in this book. But one thing that he mentions over and over again in this book is the term under the sun. Under the sun is used 29 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's used nowhere else in Scripture. Only in the book of Ecclesiastes, and basically it means life down here, under the sun. And I always say on planet Earth. That's my term that I use, but it's what's going on down here. And another term that he uses over and over again, over 30 times, the word vanity and vanities. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity, and he uses that all through this book. The word vanity means emptiness, something that is unsatisfactory, and something that leads you astray. And that's all that Solomon found in his quest for the summum bonum of life and all the pleasures and all of the wealth that he had. All he found was vanity, something empty, something worthless, and something that will lead us astray. It's like following this path for a long time that leads you finally away from your home and leads you astray into the wrong path. Or looking for that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and spending your whole life thinking that there really is one over there, and you spend your life trying to get to the end of that rainbow and you never get to the end of it and there's not a pot of gold there anyway. Or somebody that spends their life and they think they got a gold mine and they're digging this gold all their life and hoarding it up, and finally they go to cash it in, they find out it's fool's gold. It's not even the real thing. And that's what the vanity of this life does for us. I wanted to sing this song this morning because I think it kind of gives that thought about the comparison to a person who spends their life looking for this summum bonum happiness from Vanity Fair of this world, and those people who love the Lord and they find such great pleasure and treasure and joy in God's house. And it's that song, Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken. Let me just read part of this because it kind of gives, see the streams of living waters springing from eternal love. Well supply thy sons and daughters, all fear of want remove. Blessed inhabitants of Zion, washed in the Redeemer's blood, Jesus, whom their souls rely on, makes them kings and priests with God. Round each habitation hovering, see the cloud and fire appear, for a glory and a covering, showing that the Lord is near, thus deriving from their banner light by night and shade by day. Thus they feed upon the manna which he gives them when they pray. Let the world deride or pity, I will glory in thy name. Fading is the worldling's pleasure, all his boasted pomp and show. Solid joys and lasting treasure, none but Zion's children know. My friends, the things that you and I treasure here in God's house are solid joys and lasting treasures. It's not fool's gold. It's not a path that's going to lead you somewhere where what you think is going to be there is not there. Heaven is real. God is real. Christ is real. Salvation is real. The blood of Christ is real. These are things, the most valuable things that you and I, as God's people, can have down here. And so we make this comparison. And verse 9 that I just read to you, the thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done, that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Well, there's been some new things under the sun. But to Solomon, there was nothing new for him to enjoy. He had gotten to the end of his search. He had had everything. Last Sunday, we were looking at some of the things that he had imported. He had apes and peacocks and all these things that he had brought in. And there was nothing new for this man to enjoy or discover in his life venture. You know, sometimes those who have the least can find the greatest pleasure in the least of things. I remember I was working with a person several years ago, and I knew that, you know, they didn't have a lot. And she was telling me that she and her children went to Hot Springs on Central Avenue and they got to stay somewhere there. And what a great time they had. And they went to a place that had all the different kinds of popcorn there. You may have been there before. But to me, that didn't sound like something I really wanted to do or that I would find a great deal of pleasure in. And the reason is because I've been there 100 times. Well, Solomon had gotten to this place in his life that he had done everything. And we all enjoy something new, maybe going on a trip and going to a new place or revisiting somewhere. Something new is always something that excites us and, you know, kind of presses your restart button in your life. But Solomon had no restart button. He had been everywhere and done anything. And so you can see how he has come to this place in his life that there is no more real joy in his life. In verse 18, he makes this statement, in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. He had known so much, come to learn so much. He had seen all of the evil in the world. He had seen so many things that this knowledge that he had become a burden to his own soul. Now, I'm not telling you not to get knowledge. Knowledge is a great thing. Wisdom is a great thing. But there are some things that you can know that you really don't need to know, that you really shouldn't even know, that can perplex your own soul and your own heart. And verse 2 and 11, he makes this conclusion, I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, all the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of the spirit, and there's no profit under the sun. How sad. This guy had built, you know, we read of the temple, but then he built himself this wonderful palace, and he built a palace for one of his queens. And and look at the things that he said that he did here in chapter 2. And he finds it to be a vanity. Verse 4, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and orchards. I planted trees of all kinds of fruits. I made pools of water. He had swimming pools to water with the wood that bringeth the trees. I got servants, made servants, had servants born in my house. I had great possessions, great and small, above everybody that was ever in Jerusalem. I gathered silver and gold, the peculiar treasure of kings. I had men singers, women singers, the delights of the sons of men, musical instruments of all sorts. And he said, whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion. Then I looked, and what is everything that he has done? He's still not satisfied. It's all vanity and vexation of the spirit. Verse 17 is a very sad statement from a man that has everything. Look at that. Therefore I hated life. Now I know that we can get to a place in our own personal experience when we're going through a great trial in our life, and we might hate life, you know, for that moment, that day, that month. We can go through some very tragic experiences that we don't look forward to the day. But this guy here, he's come to this place that he basically hates his life and what's going on in his life. He can't find any more happiness. He is living a life without God. And then in verse 18, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool. Ye shall have the rule over my labor wherein I have labored. This is vanity. This is vanity. He's wondering, well, you know, I've built all these things. I've got all these great... Who am I going to leave it to? I mean, sometimes I think people wonder, what's going to happen with this stuff when I'm gone? Well, it doesn't really matter, because we're not going to be here anyway. We can't take it with us like King Tut thought he could. He's going to, you know, wake up from the dead one day and enjoy all these things. And he begins very depressed about it. He's thinking, there is an end to all this labor that I have wrought under the sun, all these things that I've accumulated, all these things I've acquired. There's an end to this thing. I'm not going to be able to keep all this stuff that I've accumulated in my life. Now notice with me this morning how he studies human life in this book. And I want you to see that He's going through this study. In chapter 1, verse 13, he says, I gave my heart to seek and search out wisdom. So he's going through this study, this experiment with life. He's seeking out wisdom. Verse 16, I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate. So as he's studying life, he's talking to himself. Now, we all talk to ourselves, whether you realize it or not. You talk to yourself. If you'll stop and think about it, you'll find yourself talking to yourself sometime this week, and you'll find yourself answering yourself sometimes this week. That's something that we all do. But he's telling us what he's talking about to himself. He has this experiment going on in life, and you read this all through these 12 chapters of Solomon talking to himself, and then he answers himself on what he found. And some of the things that he finds, you're going to find that he has a question that he doesn't have an answer to. Look at the question marks that are found in these 12 chapters. I searched it out. I didn't find the answer. It's like he comes to the end of the road on all these things he's searching out, because he's trying to answer these questions with the wrong things. And then notice what he says this, I have seen. This is his observation in life. Chapter 1 and verse 4, he says, 3 and 10. Chapter 3, verse 10. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. So he's observing life. 5:13, you'll find the same statement. There is a sore travail which I have seen under the sun. 5:18, behold that which I have seen. 6:1, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun. And if you go through there, you'll find him observing life and trying to make these conclusions. Did you know that you can't really make all these conclusions by observing everybody else? Sometimes you look at everybody else and you're trying to use your own wisdom and saying, well, and it's good to have good peers. Don't get me wrong on that. But what may happen to one person is not always what's going to happen to another person. We can't just make these solid judgmental things that Solomon, we see him trying to do. And so then he begins to consider what he has seen. This is also used in this book many times. He saw it, and then he thought about it. He considered it. Look at chapter 4 and 1. He said, so I returned and I considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And then 4:4, again, I considered all the travail in every right word. He's considering all the things that he's seeing. 4:15, notice what he says. I considered all the living which walk under the sun with a second child that shall stand up in his stead. 9:1. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before them. So he's considering all of these things that he's been looking at, and he's trying to determine how life really is and to find this summum bonum in his life. Now, there are some truths that he did discover in this book. So this book is not all folly. It's not all just, he never got any answers. He did get some answers, and we're going to look at a few of those right now. One thing that he learned was that a balance in life is important, and that's important for every one of us in our own personal lives. For instance, in Ecclesiastes in 7:16, he makes this statement, be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why should thou destroy thyself? So the Lord wants us to be righteous. He wants us to be light in a dark world, as Brother Doug prayed this morning. But you know, you can try to be so righteous that you cannot even enjoy the blessings that God has given to you as a person. There's nothing wrong with enjoying your life as long as you do it in a godly way. So there are many Christian liberties that you and I have been given as God's people that the Lord wants us to enjoy. You see, if he's given you money, there's nothing wrong with enjoying that money, as long as you don't let it lead you in the wrong direction or keep you from God's house or cause you to do something that you should not do. You know, whatever we have been given by the Lord, a wife, a children, family, a house, whatever, nothing wrong with building a new house. There's nothing wrong with anything you want to do, as long as you don't break any of God's laws while you're doing it. You don't rob God while you're doing it or anything else. So there's a balance in life. Another thing is that what we should and can enjoy as God's people, that's found in chapter 9, verses 2 and 3. If I've got that right. Let's look at 3:19. I think that's where I'm looking for. Where he says, verse 22, wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? So there's nothing wrong with enjoying, as I've already said, the things that God has given us, to enjoy our labors, and look what he says over in chapter 9. Go thy way, eat thy bread, with joy drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white. Let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of thy life, of thy vanity which he hath given thee under the sun. all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in this life and in thy labor, which thou takest under the sun. So enjoy your blessings. Another thing that he finds out in life, and that is that death happens to every one of us. He brings this up over and over in the book of Ecclesiastes, that he is going to have to face death one day in his life. Look at 2:14. We'll just kind of look at a couple of the statements that he makes about death. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. What event is that? It's death. Whether you're wise or whether you're unwise, your wisdom is not going to keep you from dying, he finally realized in his own experiment. 3:19, for that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beast. Even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that man hath no preeminence above the beast, for all is vanity. Listen to me. You're going to die one day. You don't know when it is, but you are going to die. I am going to die, and we may as well accept it. We're not going to be here forever. And if we try to live as if we're going to be here forever, we are going to be sadly disappointed. And one good thing you can do while in the short time that you have down here under the sun is honor God in your life. That's the best thing that you'll do with this little speck that you have, a little vapor that you have that God has given you. You're going to die. Chapter 9, verses 2 and 3. All things come alike to all. There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrificeth, to him that sacrificeth not. As is the good, so is the sinner, and he that sweareth is he that feareth an oath. What event is that? It is death. It's coming to every one of us. He has many unanswered questions, as I've already said, and I could go through many places here and show so many questions that he has. But there's just a couple here. 6:11, seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? What is man the best? Is man any better for it? Who knoweth what is good for man in his life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? That's a question. Who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? That's a question. He's got questions. You know, it seems like he doesn't understand here that we're all sinners. We're all going to die. The best thing we can do is look to the Lord and enjoy the blessings that he has given us in our life. So he's got all these questions. Well, another thing that he finds out that is very wise, that is chapter 3. This is a beautiful chapter, probably the most beautiful part of this whole book. And it's talking about the seasons of life. And not only just the seasons of life, it does talk about the seasons of life, but it also calls upon us to be wise, to know when those seasons are in our lives. You know, you need to be pretty wise if you're going to plant a garden. You need to know what season it is. You're not going to plant your garden in February, are you? Or January? Marilyn's dad always said that he's not going to plant anything before Good Friday, which seemed to be worked out pretty good for him. He didn't have to replant anything most of the time. But these seasons are a lot. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. This is chapter 3. A time to be born and a time to die. Now, that's one season that you and I have nothing to do with. I didn't have anything to do with being born, did you? I mean, I was born, but I didn't have anything to do with it, except I just appeared one day. But I had nothing to do with it. And same thing with your spiritual birth. That's why God uses the same terms in the Bible as he does in natural life. You didn't have anything to do when you were born again. That's the sovereign work of the Holy Spirit. I mean, if that's not true, then terms in the Bible don't mean what they mean in real life. So you're not born again by accepting Jesus or walking down the aisle or accepting the sinner's prayer or anything like that. You're sovereignly born of God when God speaks and you are born again. But there is a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. So we know that as far as a garden is concerned. But concerning our lives, you know, there is a time that we are supposed to do some planting in our lives. The earlier you begin to plant and you begin to prepare for your later life, the better off you're going to be. You'll have a better something to harvest. There's a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up. You know, a time to kill, you know, you think about all of the wars that have been fought. I know people that have some of the disorders after being in a war. And I wish I could tell them that there is a time to kill. When your country sends you into battle, you're not committing a sin to protect your life or to defend your country and the people that live in your country. That is not a sin. Now, it'd be a sin if you took somebody's life over there that was totally innocent and was not involved in the war. You know, but sometimes even then, when you're in a battle, you know, some of the people that flew B-17s and other bombers in World War II were dropping bombs upon the enemy. They were commanded to do so, and I'm sure there's a lot of innocent people that were killed. But you have an enemy there that will come over and destroy your families and your home. So that is not a sin. There is a time for that. Of course, there is a time not to. There's a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh. There's nothing wrong with laughter. And there's definitely nothing wrong with weeping. Sometimes weeping and crying is the best thing a person can do to deal with what they're going through. A time to mourn and a time to dance. Well, I guess there's nothing wrong with dancing with your wife at the right place and the right time. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. There's a lot of illustrations that you could go into that. You see a lot of embracing on TV. That's not a time to be doing it. But there is a time to embrace. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend, a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. See, they have the wisdom in this. I mean, how many times have we spoken when we should not have spoken? Or maybe we didn't say what we should have said when we should have said it. We were being silent when we should have spoken, but we've spoken when, you know, that the tongue is a very difficult thing to tame, according to the book of James, and I find that to be a lifetime experience for my own self. There is a time to love, and there is a time to hate. There's nothing wrong with hating evil. There's nothing wrong with hating those that hate God. David said, "Do not I hate them that hate thee, O God? I hate them with perfect hatred." Doesn't mean we're supposed to go out and burn their house down or anything, but you sure are not supposed to love those people. And I know some of the things that God writes seem very difficult for us as humans. You know, God says it like it is. We find our own emotions and sometimes our own personal feelings getting in the way of trying to see things the way that God sees them. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. Some of the interesting quotes that he has in here, I went through and just marked a few of the ones that have meant a lot to me from this book with my little red pencil. Verse 4 of chapter 5, "When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it. For he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed." That means that many of us have heard this and understand it, but when you make a promise to God, you better keep it. Don't make promises to God that you do not keep. That's why one thing, it's best not to even make a promise, because we all know that many times we are so fickle in the promises that we make, even to people around us. I'm not saying not to make one, but you better consider it very seriously before you make a promise to God. You better write it down. And you better put it somewhere where you won't lose it, because a lot of times we'll make a promise to God and then we'll forget about it. Have you ever went back and said, did I promise God this? I can't really remember if that was a promise or if it's just something I was going to do. I have. So we need to always remember to write those things down. Verse 10 of the same chapter says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is vanity. If your love is silver or your love is money, you're never going to have enough of it. You'll keep wanting to have a little bit more. If you got money in the stock market and you're thinking, I love this, you're never going to have enough money in the stock market. If you love to put your money in the bank, you're never going to have enough money in the bank. I'm not telling you not to have any money in the bank, but I'm just telling you, if that's where your heart is, it'll never be satisfied. Chapter 7, verse 2, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Did you know it's better to be in God's house than to be at the best party you've ever been to in your life? I'm not saying you shouldn't go somewhere and have a good time, but I'm saying if you had to choose one over the other in your life experience, you're better off right here. This is better than anything you can find out there when you're trying to find, quote, happiness. It's better to be in this house of mourning. Sorrow is better than laughter. You know, it's good to laugh. They say laughing makes you younger. And it's good to laugh. Laughing is a good thing. You know, it says there is a time for that. But sorrow will make you a better person than laughter will. Because sorrow makes our hearts better, doesn't it? We spoke about that last Sunday, about when we go through trials in our lives, we become more merciful to other people. We're more and more able to have compassion and empathy for other people that have gone through problems in their lives. Verse 14 of chapter 7 is another great quote. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But the day of adversity, consider. God has set the one over against the other, that man should find nothing after him. Our trials are given to us for a purpose. It's good to be happy when things are going well, but remember, when that trial comes, God's just reining you back in to bring you back to himself. Verse 4 of chapter 9 is a really wonderful statement that can give hope to us in times that we may be in despair. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. You got a child going through something terrible in your life, or some family member that you love. If they're still alive, you got hope. Because a living dog is better than a dead lion. So one day they may turn around in their life. Chapter 11 is something that Marilyn and I love in verse 1. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 and also to 8. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Whatever you have, try to help somebody else with it. If we just hold on to everything we have, whether it's our assets or whatever, because we think it's going to make us happy or richer, God's telling us that we need to cast that out and help some other people. Give it away, because it's coming back to you. Whatever we give to the Lord, it's coming back. Only it's going to come back with something extra. It may be a blessing. It may be a benefit. It may be something to your great-grandchild that you'll never know. But whatever you give to the Lord, you're going to get it back. You cannot outgive the Lord. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, this is verse 4, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. So if you're looking around for that perfect person to give something to, you're not going to find them. If you're looking for that perfect opportunity to do that which is right, you're not going to find it. If you're looking for that perfect day to join the church, it ain't going to come. You know what I'm saying? Quit looking at the stuff around you. Just do what you're supposed to do. That's what he's telling you. And then he comes to this place that he talks about old age. I see some people raising their heads now. Looking. But he is, in chapter 12, he begins to describe what happens in old age. And then finally, he describes the event of death. Remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth, when the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when they'll say, I have no pleasure in them. This is when you're young. And then he begins to talk about old age. While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In verse 3, he says, and the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease, because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. And he goes on and on. The strong men bowing is a figure of arthritis. When people get arthritis, they begin to be bowed over. The grinders cease. That's when your teeth are gone. The windows are darkened. That means you got cataracts now. They didn't have cataract surgery back then. The doors shall be shut in the streets. You can't go anywhere. The sound of the grinding is low. In other words, you're losing your hearing. You don't hear what's going on around you. You rise up at the voice of the bird, you know. You can't sleep. That's one of the things that I've noticed lately is you wake up so early. Used to, I could sleep till noon, probably. But the older you get, the less you can sleep. That's just normal. That's normal. I say, was something wrong with me? No, it's just normal. You're normally getting old. It's normally old. That's what he's saying. The daughters of music are brought low. In other words, your voice begins. You lose your voice. You can't sing. You're afraid of high places, you know. That's what he's talking about where he says, be afraid of that which is high. And fear shall be in the way. There's many fears that we have when we get older. And the almond tree shall flourish. You got gray hair. And the grasshopper shall be a burden. In other words, everything is hard to do. Putting on your socks, taking a shower, fix your own meals. You know, you're taking care of this own body becomes such a task. You know, your desire fails, your carnal desires, the enjoyment of meals, the enjoyment of any desire begins to fail. And then he goes down and he begins to talk about the mourners go about the streets. And then he speaks of the things that are immediate at death. The silver cord be loosed. That is the tongue. The golden bowl be broken. That's the brain. The pitcher be broken at the fountain. That's when you bleed to death. And the wheel is broken at the cistern. That's when the heart ceases to function, or you have a heart attack. Those are things that he is describing immediately at death. And see, this is just a real cheerful book, isn't it? He's just really happy, isn't he? He's at this place in his life. He's dwelling on all of this stuff, you know. Don't dwell on that. You've got solid joys and lasting pleasures. That's what we want to be dwelling on, the things that we want to be thinking about. But anyway, he comes to this main conclusion, remembering your Creator in the days of your youth. You better be doing that because it's going to save you from a lot of trouble. But he said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. This is verse 13 of the final chapter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And he will. In your own life, in my life, he always has, and he will. He's a God of great compassion, love, and forgiveness, but that he does that. This final conclusion, he's studied life. He's used every observation. He's looked. He's questioned. He's considered. And the best thing he can come up with is what we have as God's people. A loving, living relationship with God, with Christ, and with his people in the church. And he's missed out on a lot, hasn't he? He's missed out on so much because he spent his life with an experiment on trying to find the summum bonum when it really is free. It's right here in the house of God. Well, I appreciate your attention this morning, and I hope you're able to read this book and enjoy it, get something out of it, learn from it, apply it to our lives, hopefully, and be able to spend our life in a way that is a lasting treasure.
Thank you for visiting Harmony Primitive Baptist Church. This has been Elder Neil Phelan, Jr., preaching from regular Sunday morning services.